Well, welcome to the second week of our series on how to be happy. Happiness requires certain choices. You can't expect to be happy unless you're willing to make deliberate decisions designed to set you up for success. You have to be intentional about it. A happy life is a planned life. Last week, we looked at the first of these choices, building your life on the right foundation. We said that fear often persuades us to build on the wrong foundation, on a foundation of money or power, a weak foundation. But fear is like sand. It's unstable ground. And the greatest enemy of happiness is fear. But when you have the courage to build on a foundation of rock, on a foundation of faith in God and His plan for your life, you'll always be standing on solid ground. And once you have chosen that foundation and start to build on it, you'll be ready to take the next step toward the happy life God created you to live. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I want to talk with you today about the right heart. Everyone wants to be happy, but people who chase after happiness often miss it. The happiest people usually discover it in an unexpected way, through love, service, sacrifice, and giving themselves away. This is exactly what Jesus was saying in the gospel. Whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. Whoever does not take up his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. Now that sounds harsh. It sounds harsh because we hear the word worthy and we think criticism. You're not good enough. Or you don't deserve him unless you live up to some impossible standard, unless you earn his love by being perfect. But the Greek word in that passage actually means something different. It means living in a way that lines up with who you are called to be. It means balance and the right order to the things in your life. Jesus is asking, does your heart match the life you were created to live? It's easy to fall into patterns of living that are not balanced, not healthy, like putting work over family, or focusing so much on the children, your marriage suffers, or ignoring a clear call on your life from God because you want to stay comfortable and avoid what's hard. Work is good, family is good, and even comfort is good. The problem is not loving good things. The problem is loving good things more than the best thing. And when any good thing takes the place of what belongs to God, our hearts become unstable. One of the greatest saints in our church, Saint Augustine, he talked about this. He called it ordo amoris, the right ordering of loves. Augustine said, we're often unhappy, not because we love bad things, but because we love good things in the wrong order. And when you achieve the right order in your life, putting faith first, everything else falls into place. Work becomes more productive, family becomes happier, relationships become more meaningful because you have the right heart. And what does the right heart look like? Jesus says, it's a generous heart. Back in my former life, long before I was a priest, many of you already know that I was married. And we were very excited to have our first child. So excited, in fact, that we set up the nursery 8 months in advance. Anybody ever do that, like an eager beaver out there? We were real eager beavers. We painted the spare room, put up Winnie the Pooh borders along the walls, even assembled the crib. We were all ready. We couldn't wait to welcome that new life into the world. Well, one day we decided to take this nursery for a test drive, so to speak. Another couple we knew had an 8-month-old named William. And like most young parents, they were stressed out, exhausted, overworked, just trying to hold everything in their lives together as best they could. So we offered to give them a break, said we would take William for a long weekend. They could get away and enjoy some quiet time together. And plus, we thought it would be good training for us as future parents. what could go wrong? It's a win-win, right? Well, they jumped at the chance, but nobody could have guessed that William would have a full-blown, over-the-top, severe case of separation anxiety. The moment his parents walked out that door, William started screaming his head off. He started screaming constantly. And when I mean constantly, I mean constantly. I mean the entire weekend, day and night, night and day. We tried everything. A bottle, a pacifier, rocking him, strapping him into the back seat of the car and driving him around the neighborhood in the middle of the night to try to get him to sleep. But nothing worked. William was inconsolable. So finally, the next morning, we gave up and we called the parents. But wisely, they had switched off their telephones. So we were stuck with this crying baby all weekend. We looked at each other and thought, oh no, what have we done? We had no idea parenthood was that hard. Well, several months later, when our daughter Megan was born, it was a completely different story. Now, she screamed, she cried. In fact, for 6 months after she was born, she had one of those terrible cases of colic. You know what that is, when infants get this very serious abdominal like cramps, usually in the middle of the night, and it was really bad, and so we were up every night, practically all night, taking shifts. But some of the best memories of my life were at 3 a.m, rocking my sweet baby girl to sleep and trying to help her through the pain, trying to comfort her through the pain. It's different when they're your own. It's different when they're your own. This is what Jesus meant, I think, in the gospel when he said, whoever finds his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. The deepest joys always cost us something. The greatest loves require sacrifice. Nobody in their right mind, nobody who is a normal person would ever say, the happiest years of my life were when everything revolved around me, my success, you know, my happiness, my needs. Instead, most people say, my life changed for the better when I had children, when I helped others, when I cared for a sick spouse, even though it was hard. Serving others gives us purpose. It teaches us the meaning of love. And being focused only on ourselves, it will satisfy you for a while, but you will never experience true happiness. But when you are willing to lose your life, so to speak, by caring for others, taking care of an elderly neighbor, sacrificing your time for a good cause, being committed to something that matters, spending long hours laboring over something you love, that's when you will find your true life, your best life. St. Paul basically says the same thing in today's second reading, just in different words. He says, we were indeed buried with Christ through baptism into death, so that just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, we too might live in newness of life. Like Jesus, Paul was saying that when we experience a change of identity and lose our self-centered lives, kind of die to that self-centered life, then we come truly alive and we find our happiest lives. Jesus went on to say in the gospel to his disciples, whoever receives you receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me. Now, in ancient times, Bible times, receiving somebody didn't just mean, oh, hey, you know, a smile, a handshake, good to see you. You know, it was more than a warm welcome. It meant something more. That Greek word receive is an act of welcoming people, being hospitable to them, taking them into your home, and caring for them in a way that might be hard. It literally means making room for someone else in your life. Back when Jesus lived, there were no hotels, no easy transportation, no Buc-ee's or luxury truck stops along the way. So teachers, prophets, and missionaries who had to travel from one place to another relied on the hospitality of generous people in the local area. They had to rely on people who would open their homes to them. And to receive someone, as I said, means to open your home, to offer protection, food, encouragement, friendship, and even solidarity with people you didn't even know. And receiving a prophet or a righteous person, as Jesus pointed out in the gospel, it was kind of like partnering with them in their mission, in the good work that they were doing for God. And both parties were blessed because of it. This is what the woman from the village of Shunem did in today's first reading. She was a woman of wealth and influence, and she said to her husband, "I know Elisha, the prophet Elisha, is a holy man of God, and since he visits us often, let us arrange a little room on the roof." Don't know if I'd want to live on the roof, but let us arrange a little room on the roof and furnish it with a bed, table, lamp, and chair, so that when he comes to us, he can stay there. Well, after that, whenever the prophet passed through town, he would stay in that room. The woman from Shunem received Elisha by literally making a room for him. Literally making a room for him. But you know what? Even small things count. A warm welcome, a kind word, a welcome at church, or cooking a meal for someone grieving, or making a phone call to someone who is lonely. That's what Jesus said in the gospel when he went on to say, whoever gives only a cup of cold water to one of these little ones because he is a disciple, amen, I say to you, he will surely not lose his reward. That kindness, that hospitality, that openness and generosity to others, that reward is probably not going to be, you know, more money, power, fame, or glory. But it will be something more meaningful. It's becoming the kind of person who can actually receive happiness, which grows the more our hearts are open and generous and hospitable to others. Jesus was saying that when we honor God by making room for others, we are actually sharing in the blessings that he has put on their lives. Just look at the woman from Shunem. Her blessing by making room for Elisha was a newborn baby a year later. She had been trying for it for so long and couldn't have one. Whatever that reward turns out to be for you, your generosity will not only bless others, it will also change you and bring you true happiness. A friend of mine, a man named Bill, lost his job almost 30 years ago. He went to one of the finest business schools, got an MBA, worked for a big corporation, earned a lot of money, but one day his company downsized and he was out of a job. Bill had a family and a lot of responsibilities. He kept looking for a position, but nothing panned out. Well, it seems to have been part of God's plan for his life, because eventually Bill decided to take a job with the church. He worked right here at St. Hilary as our business manager for more than 10 years. It was lower pay and definitely much less prestigious. Bill did everything. He kept the books, put on events, answered the door, made repairs. He was the receptionist, the IT coordinator, the handyman, and the accountant, all rolled into one. Well, 15 years ago, Bill retired, but he and his wife, Dina, are still active members of this parish, still deeply involved here. Dina sings in the choir, and Bill is on the finance council. They're both Eucharistic ministers, and they manage our parish hall next door in their spare time. And on any given day, when Bill is in town, you will probably find him down on his hands and knees repairing something that needs fixing. Most recently, it was the kitchen sink in the rectory. He did a great job. A few months ago, Bill and Dina and I went out for dinner, and Bill started reflecting on his time as business manager here at the parish. He said it was the greatest honor of his life to work for the church. He made room for others. He was hospitable, generous. He spent his life serving, and he still does it every day. He has blessed so many people here at St. Hilary, but he has also found true and lasting fulfillment. If you want to know how to be happy, just ask Bill. He'll give you that big famous smile of his and probably hand you a screwdriver and tell you to get to work. Bill is happy because he has the right heart. A lot of people think happiness comes from doing nice things for themselves. But the quickest way to become unhappy is to make happiness your goal. The happiest people are the ones who stop making life all about themselves. They're the ones who are open to serving and receiving others. Because when you make room for others, you make room for Christ, who first opened his heart and made room for us. And with Christ, you will always be happy. If you want to really know how to be happy, your first question in every situation should be what the prophet Elisha asked of his servant in today's first reading. Can something be done for this person? If you can do that, that's when you know you have the right heart.